Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
His grandfather started Carl Hansen's son 116 years ago, and his father took over the business and started to work with a young architect named Hans J. Wegener, as you've probably heard of before. When his father suddenly died, his mother continued to develop the company, and he started to work abroad with shipping and was not planning to work within the family business at all. But 22 years ago, he found himself take over as a CEO and owner, from 30 employees to nowadays 600 employees and one of the largest producers of Danish design icon furniture. Welcome to the interior podcast, Knud Erik Hansen. Knud Erik Hansen.
Yeah.
Was that right pronounced?
That's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you as my first guest.
Thank you.
In this international version of the Interior Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
For the international listeners, you are the CEO and owner of the Danish furniture company Carl Hansen and Son. And this is actually a 116-year-old business.
Yes.
That your granddad started once upon
Correct.
A time.
1908.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. But for those who doesn't know the company, could you just please give us a really short description of the company?
Well, the company was founded by my grandfather, as you said, and in 1908, he analyzed himself how he was going to support a big family. And he came to the conclusion he should be on his own making furniture and supplying people living in Odense, which is the third largest city in Denmark. He started up with a small workshop, and the only people that was against him was the fire brigade, because whatever he did was hand polishing mahogany. And of course, it's extremely dangerous because it can self-ignite. The spirit you use. So he was moved around in the city for a few times, and then he moved outside the city, built a factory outside, a factory in 1934 where we put wood in the one end and finished furniture out in the other end. So at that time, quite modern. Unfortunately, then he had a heart attack after when he finished it, and my dad had to join the company. He was the second oldest son, but he did not. He was not too keen on it because he wanted to continue his education, but there was no time for that. So he joined, and in 1937 he became a partner of the company. That's where the son got onto the name. And it was just before the Second World War. So during the World War, they produced Windsor chairs, which are all in oak wood. And of course, we still make this chair, so it's very nice. But they managed to get through the war, the 5 years, and. When we got out of the war, of course, something we learned from the war was, of course, mass production or serial production. So you're not making one piece of furniture at a time. You make perhaps 50 or 100 or 1,000, but at that time, 100. That was big. And he wanted to get into that. He was a young man, and he wanted to stay on top of the developments. And for that, you need a good architect. So he tried a few local architects. That didn't go. He was not satisfied. And then he had heard of somebody in Copenhagen that designed furniture for a company called Johannes Hansen. And they were very avant-garde, the furniture. But he wanted to try and speak to the architect. His name was Hans J. Wegener. And he met him in 1947. And my dad probably talked about serial productions, and he was not interested at all, Wegener, because business was not his best side. He couldn't care less, to be very frank. But his wife was had a big attention onto how to make a living out of being an architect. So she listened to my dad, and of course in 1949, 2 years later, he got to see us at the factory, and he had five pieces of furniture with him, the drawings, and they, you know, started making the prototypes. They only made four, because I'm sure my dad said the fifth one we can't make because we don't have people enough for that. So they made four, and one of them was the wishbone chair. It was number 22, 23, 24, and 25. And we still make all the more still.
Yeah, and that is and one of the most sold products.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful furniture, and they're doing very well worldwide. And so we, you know, he got into that. At the same time, he also wanted to promote very much Danish design and Danish furniture. He worked like a horse, unfortunately, probably a little bit too much, because in 1962 he had a heart attack and died, only 50 years old.
Yeah, I thought we were going to talk a bit about that later on.
Yes.
Because for about 22 years ago, you were working in Asia.
Yes.
And you were actually not going to work in the family business.
My brother was earmarked for that, and he's also educated as a carpenter and had done his commercial education as well. And he joined the company, but I can tell you, it's like two brothers. It's difficult for them to agree on the style, the way you should work. My brother is a little bit more lean back than I am. He's not married. His ambition level is I think a bit smaller than mine. So he wanted to stay as it was. He didn't want to invest too much. He didn't want to expand. He said, "I eat one steak a day. That's enough. So what do I need more?" I'm not like that. So I realized we couldn't work together. So I joined another company, which was in full agreement with my mother. And it was called the East Asiatic Company. And it was a big trading, shipping, and manufacturing company, the largest company in Scandinavia at that time. That was in 1969. And I completed my apprenticeship. It took 3 years, joined the army, was in the army for a year. Got back and had a year more education at the head office, and then left Denmark for South Africa. And I worked 4 years in South Africa, and then I was moved to Singapore. And I worked 4 years in Singapore as a marketing manager of a huge shipping agency that East Asiatic had a share in. And then I worked 10 years in Hong Kong and China, just when Deng Xiaoping opened up China.
So I
was very fortunate.
Yeah.
And traveled a lot in China and got a lot of China business organized via our ships, both to the United States and to Europe. So that was a big work. And I was 10 years in Hong Kong. And then I left Hong Kong by my own and went back to Denmark. And I was there for 9 months and 3 days. And then I went to Hamburg and I worked 4 years in Germany. Fantastic time. I loved it. And then we agreed internally in East Asiatic Company that we should sell the shipping activities. Of course, it requires an enormous amount of capital. And we felt that it was difficult for us. Although we had just had two huge container ships delivered, we thought, well, it's not us. So we sold it all to Maersk, A.P. Moller. It took a weekend. He had bought everything. And then I left the company after 26 years. And I joined Tempur Pedic, which is a mattress company.
Yeah, where well, I became really well known.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was Swedish owned at that time. And I worked there for about 5 years. And I ended up selling the company to American Interests. And from there on, I went to my... I actually had a good job in Hong Kong. I could return to Hong Kong. And my wife, who's a medical doctor, said, you do that. I'm very happy to join you there because it's no problem for me to find a job. And I went to my brother then, and I had actually 50% of Carl Hansen at that time, which was a small company of only about 30 people. I said to my brother, "You buy my shares?" And he said, "No, I don't buy your shares because I want to retire." He was 57. And I said to him, "Come on, you know, that's far too early." "Well, if you don't want to sell, then I sell the company." And that I thought, that's a pity. We shouldn't do that. And so I went back to my wife and I said, "You know, he wants to sell his shares to me." And so she said, what would you prefer? What would you do? That's your decision. I will follow. So I said, okay, I stay. And I try and give it a shot. And she said, if you don't make it, well, we can always live off my salary. Yeah. So that was very kind. At least I had a fallback.
Yeah.
And then we went on, and I built a new factory in Funen Island in Denmark. And I stayed there for about, I think, about 10 years. And then I bought another one. So that was the third factory I had during a very short time.
But wait a minute, Knudé, because you came back. You had, I read that you had like 60 employees. You said 30, but I read.
I think it was about 30 we had.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
And then now you are almost 600 people.
Yes, in Denmark, yes. Employed in Denmark, yes.
It's right. Like a remarkable success story.
That's great.
Sometimes you just, don't you ever stop and like, how did this happen?
I don't know. I think it must be the influence from the Far East. I mean, living in Hong Kong, it's probably business-wise the most enjoyable time I ever had. Business is so fast out there, and you know, you see results very fast. And if you work and have connections and, kind of please your connections and so on and make business, you can grow very fast. And I think that was when I went back to Europe, and I must say, when you come from Hong Kong, for 10 years in Hong Kong, you know, Europe is very lean back. I mean, we have friendships, we have, sports, and we enjoy life, and which is, I have nothing against that, and I probably do the same today. But, I mean, it is a different lifestyle to living in Hong Kong and Singapore. And because there you work 24 hours a day, and the weekends and all that, you know, you don't have time to stop, especially not in shipping, which is very competitive. Yeah. So I must say, getting back to Europe, you know, I felt, you know, they are all fast asleep. And I thought, well, let's move, right? So I didn't join any of the societies or anything like that, like my dad did. I went on my own and dealt with the banks, dealt with anybody, and which was normal for me. And therefore, we expanded very, very fast. And I believed in the products, and that place, I was right.
But how did the people, accept you when you came from this totally different environment? I can imagine people had a bit of a problem to accept your way of dealing with things. Or did
they didn't. I mean, and that is what had it been in Hong Kong, for instance, or in the Far East, they would have retaliated much harder. You know, because I ate away from their market share, but they didn't. I mean, that's fine. Let him work. That's okay, and we have a nice time. And you know, it's this kind of environment. I at that time I didn't agree to at all, and it has resulted in a different way to what I think most of my competitors or friends in the business have done. I've also bought up a lot of smaller companies in order to secure the rights for a number of golden age architects, which are from 1914 and up to Hans J. Wegner, who died in 2007. I have basically all the big architects in my stable of architects nowadays. And you know, the company is having such a push worldwide that everybody, I think, enjoys what we are doing and can see the future in what we are doing. Mm. And that I benefit from today.
But when you started, it was 22 years ago when you came back and started as a CEO. Mm. What was the first decision that you made?
That was to build a new factory.
Ah.
And I went straight to the bank. In those days, you could borrow money in the bank. That was quite fantastic. And on my bare face, I borrowed the money to build a new factory and buy machinery and employ people and get started. And with the export again and the United States and Europe, all over the place, and employed salespeople. We have no agents, so we'd be... The agents my brother had, I terminated, and then we employed our own people. So all over the world today, we have our own organization with people dedicated to work for my company. Mm. and therefore for Carl Hansen and so on. And therefore, you know, they concentrate 100% on our business.
Do you think that is one reason that you have had a business success in export?
It's one of the reasons. Mm. You know, if you want to, can you say, if you want to break through abroad in exports, you have to concentrate 100% on that. It's not something you do with your left arm because it will never work. The competition is way too strong. So you have to concentrate 100% and travel a lot yourself and be seen and enjoy other people and other can you say cultures, which I do actually. I love it and the food and everything. I don't mind at all whether I'm in India or I'm in China or wherever I am. Mm. I eat everything they eat. I have eaten frogs and everything. Don't worry, I try it all. But I mean, I enjoyed it, and it's part of the living. Mm. And therefore, I think that is also what many people are, you know, a little scared of. But I love it.
But when you look back at these years as a CEO, what are you most proud of, and what are the things that you regret?
I'm very proud of what my ancestors, what my family have done in running the company, in building it to where we are today. I am of course grateful to my grandfather and my father, who both worked and very, very hard, and they had different means to what we have today. Communication at that time, that was craftsmanship. Mm. I mean, you had to travel, you had to see people directly. Today you are in computer age, you know, you get on a screen with somebody you have never met, and it doesn't matter because you very quickly find out that we actually have we agree on many things, and we have the same background, the same way of communicating, and therefore we can easily tolerate whatever is going on. So it's a completely different way of doing business, and but I think the way they did it was a hard way. A very hard way, and they did it, and it. I mean, my father, it cost his life, and my mother too. Fantastic energy to as a housewife to take over a company in 1962. Mm. She left, she lost all her friends, and because they didn't, they thought, you know, what the hell is he doing? You know, that is, she should stay with the cooking jars.
Oh,
and,
yeah, we have to come back to that, yeah. Because so it's
the way, and that is what I'm very grateful for.
Yeah,
today.
And do you have any regrets? Like,
Well, I of course I'm sad, of course, a little sad to leave the shipping business, which I enjoyed very, very much, and especially Hong Kong. I loved Hong Kong. And China, because it was such a a business which it I was really focused on that, and I loved it. But I mean, it's very difficult to be married and have children and so on with such a job. Mm. Therefore, you know, they become very easily number two in the priority list instead of the work is number one, which happens in the Far East, and that's tough to be married like that. And mm. and therefore I cut through and said, now I go back to Denmark, to Europe, and but I realized I have to. If you say it's something you regret, of course, is that I had to go back. I was it was not my own free will, but I had to, mm-hmm. And that of course is something. Today I'm happy. I'm beautifully married, and I have a nice life. So I have been lucky, let me say that. But many of my colleagues at that time, they are not. They would like to stay behind. They would love to stay in the Far East forever. Mm. But it's very difficult. Yeah.
But you've had a dedicated wife. I mean, you said, Inger has joined you and is working as a CEO still after all these years.
Yes.
That's how is it to work so closely together with your family?
It's both very pleasant and it's also very tough.
Yeah.
In the pleasant way is that I have kind of an extended voice, if you know what I mean. I can speak to my wife and say, well, maybe we should do it like this and so on. And it is always us, and that means we do it together. If it was somebody else, it would be a discussion. It's lesser discussion here because it's for our both our benefit. Eh? So it's a little, that is very, very nice, but I can't sack her. And, you know, she's not forced to listening to me. And of course, sometimes that can give a, can be a little bit of a problem.
So do you argue a lot?
No.
No?
No. We don't. And if we did, we couldn't work together.
No.
No, she's a medical doctor. So she also, like me, have a completely different background to furniture. But she has a good taste, and she's very, very energetic. And she enjoys her job. She enjoys her colleagues. She has her own department. It's like a separate company within the company. And she has a free hand, and of course she makes a budget, and she has to see that we meet the figures there. But it is, you know, in my way, I know that it's happening in the best possible way because she does it for our mutual benefit.
I think it's also impressive that I talked to you before that that my parents are 74 and are retired, and you're still going and going and going. Mm. I mean, it's impressive to see that you don't have any, like, you're not going to quit your job.
No, I mean, I'm waiting for the next generation, of course. And we adopted, my wife and I adopted two boys from Vietnam. They are medical, they are biological brothers. The one is now an production engineer, educated in Denmark, of course, and living in Vietnam at the factory we have out there and making outdoor furniture and furniture for the contract business. And it's 100% owned company. And the other one is still, he finished his university, got his diploma and all that. And then he left for Singapore, and he worked has worked 2.5 years in Singapore now for Quadrat, the people that supply all the fabric for the furniture. And he's enjoying that very much, but he will be coming back very soon.
Just like his dad.
Yeah,
he doesn't
exactly
want to
no,
leave.
He doesn't. No, of course he doesn't. He's happy there. But on the other hand, he knows it's cut out for him what the way he should work and the way he should continue his life. And he's agreeing to that. It's not there's no direct force from our side. So it's up to him. If he didn't want to, I mean, then it's a different story. But he actually all the way through wanted to take over the business. Whereas my oldest boy, he stays in Vietnam and speaks it fluently and the language and is very, very happy there. So he is not coming back.
And you have a factory in Vietnam making all the outdoor furniture,
yes,
as you said.
Yeah.
So that's a perfect combination then.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Actually, it worked out perfectly well for me, yes.
You told us earlier that your dad died when you were 10 years old.
Yes.
And your remarkable mother,
yeah,
who was a housewife, as many women were during that time, took over. That must have been a shocking situation for your mom and for you, you two brothers.
Yeah. My dad was a very active person, a very... very. Also, they had a fantastic family life, you know, they were only 45 and 50 years old. Mm. I mean, they were young people still, and all of a sudden, on one second, it's cut off, and you know, you stand there, what to do now? Mm. With one thing is, you lose your husband, you are in great grief, and so on. She was. Because she was happily married, and you know, and then the next thing is she has two children. She has, I think we were 80 people in the business at that time. Mm. It was a big factory in those days in 1962. So I mean, she had to make up her mind quite quickly, and of course also the creditors were there, and because all the credits you had with all the suppliers, I mean, that is null and void the minute the owner dies, because it was not a limited company; it was a one-man show. So you could, if you are a creditor, you have to get your money very quickly. So the next day, they were standing outside there wanting their money. We lived next to the factory. And luckily, my dad had some very high, very sizable life insurances, which the bank actually took and then paid the creditors. And then we survived. thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
But then we had no money.
But do you remember this time? You were only 10, but can you still remember that?
Okay, I remember every second of it. Something that you never forget. And for me, it was as very hard, but it was also realizing that now life changes. And, you know, it was... I had to go to the school and tell the headmaster that what had happened, and of course they were very, very sweet to me. But it was something I did myself. I was only 10 years old, and this I never forget. And I also never forget the way they took care of me, and helped me, and so on. So that was a very nice gesture, but also something that is printed in my mind, and that I don't hope that, well, now I'm at an age and my children are at an age that they will not experience the same. But it is very, very hard. Mm. And it was in those days because there was no mercy, I can tell you. There was nobody putting... there was some support, of course, but all my mother's female friends, they left her. Because, you know, she should stay with putting the cooking pots and stay as a housewife. But she couldn't. Because she wanted to see my brother and I take over the business.
And she stayed, she ran the business for several years.
20 years, yes. Mm. And she didn't speak any foreign languages. She had no formal education. And I've seen her many times at fairs like what we are at here today, selling furniture in Danish, speaking to French, Americans, Germans, you know. She was very charming and actually not a tall, fantastic woman, but very, very charming and very energetic, absolutely. And they loved her, and they bought furniture from her.
Oh.
And so within a few years, she managed to swing up and get the company at a size and at a level where we could start employing people to take care of the sales and things like that. So that helped. But she really worked on her own. That was tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was there. I was at the fairs together with her because we nobody to look after us.
No.
So we were there, both of us, and helped as well as we could.
But also, it's really impressing of her as a mother. She could have forced you almost to join her in the company. Mm. But I mean,
she didn't,
and that's really.
No, I don't. I would say perhaps my brother was more under pressure than I was. I'm number two, and number two is always. He has a softer life than number one, and have a choice which number one hasn't got. So I would say in that way I was lucky because in some way I was lucky. On the other hand, I always think if I had taken over in the early 90s, what would have happened? But forget it. I mean, that's just Schnee von gestern, as a German says. Yeah. It's something you can't do anything about.
No.
And I'm happy my brother at least could continue the business so I could take it over.
Mm.
And therefore, I mean, we have a fantastic family life today. It's harm or anything. Of course, my mother is not here anymore, but my brother is, and we have a good relationship still.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You are listening to the English version of the Interior Podcast by me, Johanna Hulander. In this podcast, you will meet different guests and topics within Scandinavian interior, design and architecture. Follow the podcast on Instagram at the Interior Podcast in one word and the Swedish version at Inrednings understreck podden. That will say inrednings underscore podden. Carl Hansen has always been working with really famous Danish designers almost since the beginning, such as Wegner, Børge Mogensen, Kari Klint, Arne Jacobsen, up to these days. Mm. But they
only came later on. It was Wegner to start with. For the first, my father's time, my mother and my brother's time, it was only Wegner.
So you were the one who bought up...
I bought up 9 different smaller companies, not because of their smaller companies. I was not interested in, but I was interested in their relationship with the Golden Age architects. So in that way, I got my foot in everywhere and could expand on some of their fantastic furniture. Mm. And of course, today we make it all, not all of it, but we make furniture from all these architects. Mm. And I think that's what makes Carl Hansen a special thing.
Yeah. How do you decide what kind of designers you want to work with? I mean, for the young designers listening now, it's a hard time. Mm. We all know that.
Yes.
I mean, what are the criteria for working with you?
Well, it is, of course, a lot of it has got to do with their personality, that they are very good at working at, can you say, the classical way of designing and bringing these ideas forward to 2024. So we also work with very young architects today, Rikke Frost and Eros and these, and not only Danish architects, but also Eros is from Austria and so on. And we, of course, have a feeling that these people have to kind of continue what we are doing, not going in east and west and north and south, because the furniture won't match. And I think one of the good things here is that our furniture can be in the same room together, but irrespective of whether they were designed in 1914 or they were designed yesterday.
As we can see in this room where we're recording
exactly,
right now.
Exactly.
We're actually in a kind of bedroom section of your flagship store.
That's correct. You're sitting on a Wegner chair, I'm sitting on a Kåre Klint chair, and we have a Børge Mogensen bed. So you see, they all stand together, and it's no problem, they match.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm.
I need to ask this question because you have actually met some of these icons.
Yeah.
Are there any specific memorable moments that you can just give us some...
One of them would be, of course, Wegner. We have just introduced the rocking chair, and I actually saw him perfecting the rocking chair in the workshop.
Ah.
And working with our best carpenters. He actually did it himself, worked at the workshop with them. I think one funny thing was, at least my observation was, that his language was completely different when he was in the workshop as when he was together with my dad and mom and together with other people. But in the workshop, it was the way they work and they talk together in the workshop, which he enjoyed very, very much because he was foremost a fantastic carpenter.
Ah.
And so was my dad, by the way. But I mean, those two and they enjoyed using their hands and making that rocking chair stand right and rocking perfectly and not turning backwards over and all that kind of stuff. And it was fun. And I just laid on a bunch of packaging material. They didn't know I was there. I just laid there and observed everything. And I'll never forget that.
Oh.
And this I must have been 7, 8 years old. And I enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it took hours, but I mean, I didn't mind. I just laid there and observed. And that's something I never forget.
No. And he actually lived here until 2007.
Yes, he did. Yes.
And did he live in Denmark all the time?
Yeah, all the time, yes. He did. And he was, of course, a very staunch Dane. He was from the southern part of Denmark, from Tønder, which is right at the close to the border to Germany. So you are very nationalistic down there. And of course, that infiltrated him as well. You know, he liked to be in Denmark and stay in Denmark, of course. And we also produce all his furniture in Denmark.
Yeah.
So and this brightened his way of thinking.
Was he active just until he died? Or?
No, no, he wasn't. The last, I think, the last 10 years, he was not active.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But he had also done a lot. Mm. I must say, he's worked, really worked hard, and he became over 90 years old.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was time for him to retire.
Exactly. Yeah. Today, I know that sustainability is important. I mean, it's for everyone, it's important these days. But for you, you have built this ultra-modern factory.
Yes.
In the island of Fyn.
Mm.
And you also produce much of your products from wood. And how do
All
you
of
look
it, yeah.
upon mm. sustainability today?
Sustainability is, of course, something we have all the time been supporting.
Mm.
And for us, it is continuing living as we have always done, because my dad and my granddad, for that matter, was very determined and very observant of top quality. The furniture had to last. And when people buy it and pay some money for it, they should also get a good value for their money. And this is what we live from today as well. People find that when they buy the furniture, they get a good deal. I mean, they're not ripped off. And I mean, we are like that. And they get first-class furniture. And they can sit on it for generations. And they can lay on it. They can put their books on. They can whatever. And they become just more and more beautiful because they get patina and so on. And so, I mean, that is the way we have been thinking. And that is just in the, can you say, thinking of young people today. They like sustainability. They like people things to last. This throwaway syndrome that, especially in the United States, you have seen, you know, people threw away a whole flat and a whole house when they moved, right? And then new stuff in. That is not the case anymore. Now they are starting to buy things that they like. Even in China today, they want imported. They want Danish furniture because they know it lasts and they don't want the rubbish they're doing themselves.
Mm.
So therefore, it is something we support a lot and are very happy that the world is turning the way it is in that way,
mm.
that we are now more and more focused on sustainability, on reuse and also on our the overall quality
mm.
that is so important.
And is it true that if I have the wishbone chair and I want to return it to you, mm. you actually let me return it?
We will buy it up. We will buy it from you, and we will redo it and sell it again in our shops.
Mm.
And of course, notify people that it's a second-hand chair. We're not selling anything second-hand as new, but you know, we do that, and we have something called Relove, a term we use where we refurbish old furniture and sell it again, and they will last another lifetime or two,
mm.
And then they come back again.
That's good.
I hope.
In Sweden, there are only a few furniture factories left.
Yes.
The most production has gone abroad.
Yes.
And it's hard to find skilled people today.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How is the situation in Denmark?
We cannot expect anybody to educate young people to come and work for us. So we do it ourselves. We have all the time at least 25 apprentices. They work on their own, but they work in a separate part of the factory. They're not involved in the production. They're doing special duties like making furniture that where we find the drawings at the castles somewhere, or you know, where they really learn the trade, the carpentry. From the beginning, how they make, we make a drawer, how you join it, and all that kind of stuff by hand. Of course, there are machines today that can do it, but they need to know how it is done by hand and how it was, what was before the machines came. So they have a 3.5 year education at our place, and they go to schools and things like that as well. But we have a fantastic master to teach them. And therefore, it is a completely different way of working as to being in the factory. So when they are finished, most of them stay with us, and some of them we teach to program the machines, because they know how it's done. And so some of them have that interest, and if they have that, I mean, they themselves can program. And then, of course, they go into the production. So we educate most of our own people, and the same goes with upholstery and other of the trades we have in the factory, that we educate people ourselves.
Mm, smart.
Because we cannot expect anybody to do it for us.
What do you think about the challenges that we have for the Scandinavian furniture? I mean, the world of a Scandinavian.
I think the challenges industry. Are getting less now, actually, at this moment, because the environmental considerations help us. I was just in Italy here a couple of weeks ago, speaking to some fantastic architects. And of course, they make most of their furniture in steel, aluminium, leather. And I said to them, you know, it takes a tremendous amount of energy to make your furniture. And they said, yes, 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 I do. Yes, of course. And, you know, we can feel that our wooden furniture is coming more and more south, moving southwards in Europe, away from the steel and the hard and dirty work to a something natural and much more friendly, environmentally friendly furniture. And people think naturally more on natural products, which we have, and they grow in our backyard, so that we don't harm the environment by doing anything. And of course, we have a waste policy as well, which is very, very important. So nothing is wasted. In our factory, so I can tell them about that as well. And when they listen to all that, they say, "Well, this is what we must do." Actually, yeah. So we feel a great goodwill from most architects thinking of the future.
But how do you look upon the future for the whole Danish furniture industry? Danish design is it's more. And well known than actually
yes,
Swedish
you're
right. or Finnish
you're
design.
Right. You're
and
right.
But how do you look upon the future for the whole Danish furniture industry?
Well, there are very few big movers. There are some very, very big factories in Denmark, of course, making furniture in a different style, and that's a completely different market. If you look at a pyramid, you have a very flat pyramid. And you have on top, you have the very expensive furniture, very, very expensive. And then you have the Carl Hansen and Son line underneath, which is quite wide, and make the absolute top furniture. And then you have the lower part where people are paying very little for their furniture, like IKEA and things like that, and they get a good knowledge of how to furnish, how to put colors together, how to put curtains up, and things like that. So I'm not against it, but it's a different clientele than what we have, and therefore we will all exist but not competing in that way, because once people have had the lower level furniture for a while, they want to move up, and then they come to us. And that is interesting. Mm. So the people buying our furniture is probably from about 30 years old up to about 75.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yes.
And I have to congratulate you, because recently you received you became a royal court supplier for
That's
the
correct.
Royal family.
Correct, yes.
So does this mean that King Frederick is now decorating his castle with your stuff?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, we have supplied, of course. The only way we can get that title is, of course, that we have had some relationship with the royal family through the years. And I have a whole page of that. And we have done a lot of smaller business together, but we have done it. And I think it's been there, whatever. Perhaps what my dad did with the royal family is still there, and it's still relevant and in order, and so I think they choose to give us that beautiful acknowledgement,
yeah,
which I'm so proud of.
Yeah, did you get an invitation to actually look upon the decoration or no?
No.
Unfortunately.
No, I mean, it is something that you are rewarded and you can apply for it. And then they get their attention to you. And I must say, it's very difficult. And at the end, you know, you get a notification from the Royal Court. And I mean, that's a fantastic thing. But we are the only manufacturers in Denmark that has got that honor, can you say? And it changes when we have just changed our king and queen has just are newly appointed, and therefore the honor we have will be renewed for hopefully, but we don't know. So it is every time we change the royal family, the next king or the queen, we start from the beginning again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have to be deserving what we have all the time. And sometimes it comes up for revision, and if we are not good enough, then out.
Oh, let's pray for the
exactly.
continuous.
We really hope so, because it is an acknowledgement, which I think it's the oldest monarchy in the world, and therefore people are aware of it, and they also know what it stands for. Again, durability, long-term relationship, and so on, which is very important, and which help us in our business.
I just want to talk about a bit more of the Danish society, because many of the international listeners from all over the world, they have maybe heard of the concept hygge.
Yes.
What does that mean to you?
It means a tremendous amount in our spare time, because we live inside the house, can you say, three-quarter of the year, like you do here in Sweden. And of course, the lighting is important, the furniture is important, because you have our life goes on inside. And therefore, most of us live in much larger houses than you would see in the Far East or in the United States in average. But you know, and we are. But that is because we live inside, and it is cold and windy outside, nasty climate. But yes, that makes us, cuddled together inside in a beautiful lighting, not in neon light or anything like that, but in a cozy light and very, settled, nice environment where you are not blinded by some big projector in the top or anything like that. So it's a very special environment which calms us down. And I mean, I think it can date back to the time when we lived in a cave and just had a fire going, and that was the only light we had. And even the candles in the past centuries, people lived from candlelight. And we're continuing that, although we have electricity and so on, but it's the same kind of light you have today, and the same kind of heating and so on. I think most of the houses in Northern Europe and in Denmark today has a kind of an open fire inside a little burning place. But I mean, we have an open fire because we still enjoy seeing the fire and being around there, getting the heat and so on from that. It's fantastic.
So, and light candles, as you say,
exactly,
which is quite
exactly
unusual. In
yes, it is.
Different parts.
Yes, and it's part of our culture, and I think you have to experience it, otherwise you don't understand it.
No, I just need to ask you one more question, and that is, how does a normal day look like in your life these days?
Well, I'm an A person, so I get up very early in the morning. I start at 4:45. And I have my office in my house as well. I have an office in my house, and I go in there and see what happened during the night, because we work worldwide, so we have some people in our organization working at that time as well. And then I answer if I can immediately, and also for some of our people in Denmark, of course, or in Europe, have small children. And when they have put these small children to bed or gone for a walk with the dog and things like that, they go in and sit down and work for an hour. That could be at 11, 12 at night. And therefore, when they get back to work at 8 in the or 9 in the morning, they have an answer. And that, again, is something which I feel is good for them. They feel, we are so closely together. And time is not an essence. So when they get to work, they have an answer and they can continue their work. So the night was just the time when you sleep and then you go back to work. And there is already something that enables them to continue. So that I felt also from my shipping days, it was very important that information went very, very fast. And it did, and it sits in me still. And therefore, so I work from early morning, and then, of course, nowadays I'm 73 years old now, so, I mean, when my wife and I get home from work, we are quite tired. But we have a wonderful dog, a German Shepherd, beautiful dog, and that is being treated with a long walk and some play, and my wife is training the dog and so on. So at about 9 o'clock, we are ready to go to bed. And I tell you, we sleep immediately. Yeah. So after a day at the factory and getting back and cooking the food and so on, and then playing a little bit with the dog, and then that's a day for us. The weekends are different, but I mean the every day is the work is a great part of it.
Mm. But do you have any time for a hobby?
My hobby is of course working. I must say it is something which is a relief for me because my wife works as well, so we are not conflicting in any way. Which, when you have small children and so on, it's different. But when nowadays, when they have flown away and happily are happy, and we are left behind with the factory, and we both work there, it can sometimes be late. But it's something that it's just natural for us, and therefore that is where that is basically our hobby. And my wife starts in the morning to see what did we sell during the night, eh? and so on. So I mean, it's a sport for us, you can say, and that is a hobby. Mm. Eh? So it is a great part of our life. And now, of course, when youngest son get home, slowly but surely we will start finding a different way of living. And we have a beautiful house also. Where we live, and we have another house where we next to the water, to the sea in Denmark, which we are extending now, which is also kind of a hobby, which is very nice for us both to agree what should it be and so on, and working with an architect and all that. So that's another hobby, you can say. And when that is finished, we have a nice place to stay in summertime.
Ah, that's nice.
So, and that we are preparing also for being a little older there, and looking after the garden, and always having a dog.
Yeah, for sure.
Always.
in this podcast, you the guests are being asked what kind of person they want to listen to in an upcoming episode. Is there any specific person that you are interested in
listening to?
Yeah.
Yes, I must say that is of course not so amusing, but I would love to have listened to my dad.
Yeah.
I mean, how did he do his business? Mm. How was he? How was he in a negotiation? Did he do it with humor, and which I think he did? Not getting angry, but getting his results. That is something that I miss in my life. Mm. But also, of course, listening to my son in another 2 or 3 years, that would be nice too.
That is workable. I can do that.
Yeah. And of course, being with my wife, and I hope that we are going to be old in a nice way, and living nicely, also getting an otium where we can enjoy each other in a different way to what we're doing today, but I mean also continuing life together. That I'm very happy for.
Thank you so much, Knut Erik. And I think it's time for a fika, don't you think so?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
If you like this podcast, please share episodes you like, rate and review on Apple Podcasts, and you want to listen to a specific guest or a specific topic within Scandinavian interior design or architecture, please send a DM.
Hold up. Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.